Hey, greetings, everyone. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West here, and welcome to the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. You gotta light 'em up before they burn it down. Better dig deep, put 'em in the ground. But on their hands, they're hellbound.
Before they burn it down.
Greetings, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. In my career, from the battlefield to Congress, honor and integrity have always been my compass. When it comes to building a precious metals portfolio for my family, I choose United Patriot Coin. Their commitment to honesty and transparency aligns with everything I stand for. They care about our great country and focus on serving patriots from all walks of life. They've teamed up with veterans of the precious metals market to create a new kind of gold dealer designed to serve the needs of a new type of gold buyer. And that's why I know I can trust them when it comes time to buy my gold and silver. If you value honesty and reliability as I do, then join me. Hey, greetings, everyone. Welcome back to the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. You know, we hear so much about gender dysphoria, transgenderism, National Transgender Day of Visibility on Resurrection Day, blah, blah, blah. But I think there are some victims of this ideological agenda of the left that are going unseen, unheard of. Their voices are not being, you know, heard out in the public sphere. And so there's a young lady who really is speaking up for these young women, and her name is Amy Ichikawa. Amy Ichikawa is a Christian conservative and an incarcerated women's rights advocate. After spending 5 years in Central California's women's facility, she founded the faith-based nonprofit organization Woman to Woman. Woman to Woman is a community providing resources, education, and support services for system-impacted women. They stand in solidarity with their sisters, being a voice for the voiceless and ensuring them that they are not forgotten. They champion the rights and welfare of their sisters through advocacy and education, along with providing services for parole, suitability hearings, commutation, preparation, and one-on-one reentry support, welcoming women back into the community with dignity and respect through a team who have lived the experience. Amy has published op-eds in the Christian Post, the New York Post. She has been quoted in the Wall Street Journal, featured on Fox News, California Insider, and the Epoch Times. And she is honored to be an ambassador for the Independent Women's Forum, along with other women across the country and the world who are accomplishing great things. Amy Ichikawa, welcome to the Steadfast and Loyal podcast.
Thank you very much.
Well, tell us a little bit about your history. We know that you are based out in Southern California, Torrance, California, but tell us, you know, your experience and how that leads to why you're so involved and engaged and in the founding of Women to Women.
Okay. Well, in 2009, I was arrested for the very first time and was sentenced to 5 years in this California state prison. And it honestly, that was a life-saving experience for me. That 5 years completely changed my life. And because of all the enrichment and development and the crash course in life that I received inside, I feel that this is the very least I can do for the population who is being silenced on so many issues and coerced into all kinds of different thinking structures. And they're one of the most vulnerable sectors of the population. So, you know, in the beginning, we were creating this organization because we wanted to make sure that the resources that were available were readily available and in a form where they were accessible to people, because I didn't know we had resources when we got out. And I probably could have definitely benefited from them. So in the midst of doing that, at the very exact same time, the implementation of the gender self-ID laws started, and it just became a priority over everything else. After receiving calls and hundreds of letters from women who were crying out for help, I didn't see any other option but to prioritize this.
Now, when you went into prison back in 2009, was this gender identity thing, was this a move that was happening at the time? And how do you see this has really affected the safety and security of young women that are incarcerated in our penal facilities?
When I was incarcerated, the situations with transgender individuals was dealt with on a case-by-case basis. People, you know, if there was a serious safety concern or if they were insistent on being in the women's prison, it was very few and far between. There was a certain situation when I was there in, I think, 2010 or 11, where a convicted rapist was extradited to serve their life sentence in California women's prison after attempting to mutilate themselves to get into the women's prison. This person committed a double rape in the same county that the prison was in. So many women were familiar with this situation and the details of the case. This person didn't fare well. They were very aggressive, tried to implement male prison politics into the women's daily lives. And it doesn't, the cultural differences between men and women's prison is incredible. It's very different. It's nothing.
Help us to understand that. I mean, what is that cultural difference that I'm sure a lot of the audience here would not understand?
Women generally create family units in the prison system. There's literally moms and dads, kids. It's a familial setting. It's not always a healthy family. It's oftentimes a very dysfunctional family, but that's what women immediately start doing. There isn't the routine where you wake up every morning and start, you know, training for war or exercising and doing, you know, burpees. They're not doing that. And in the men's facility, you're exposed to a much higher level of violence that we don't see at all in the women's prison. There's not stabbings daily. There's not people cutting off each other's heads. There's not that level of insanity. So there's also not the racial separation or the separation of people according to their crime levels. In California, there's levels 1 through 4. Women are all housed together, regardless of your security level. Men are separated by levels. So when someone is transferring into the women's prison from a men's facility, you're taking a level 4 person from a men's prison and moving them into women's general population with everybody. So this is a general concern as well. And there's no limitations as far as your criminal history. So there are people that are, profound sex offenders, people with long histories of violence against women that are transferring in. The individual I was talking about before, this is somebody who committed 2 rapes of a mother and daughter and electrocuted his victims during the torture. And, you know, he brazenly asked the Women's Advisory Council president if he could get help getting a job in the electrical shop. So this is the kind of psychological warfare that women just aren't prepared for. These are people who have trained in, you know, mind games for years and perfected their craft. And now they're in an environment that gives them free range of victimizing women who are already broken and trying to heal and trying to better themselves to meet the criteria to be found suitable for parole. No one can focus on that, not even the predators. No one's benefiting from this. No one can rehabilitate under these circumstances. And even the predators are now in their criminal behavior and thinking at the hand of the state and our state legislators.
You know, it's interesting because you said once upon a time while you were there incarcerated, it was a case by case basis. Now it seems that in the state of California, they have turned this into a law. Am I correct in that assessment?
That's correct. In 2019, Senator Scott Wiener authored SB 132, which is the Transgender Respect, Agency, and Dignity Act. It wasn't implemented until 2021 because of the long-term California COVID lockdowns. So as soon as that was lifted, they started sending in the first busload of transfers. And these individuals all have convictions that the women were guaranteed that those kind of people weren't going to be transferring. People with, you know, histories of violence against women, children, sex offenders, they're all included in that. There's individuals who killed other people in the men's prison who still qualified for transfers. And, you know, just to be very clear about this, there are no other requirements other than self-ID. There's no requirement for reconstructive surgery. There's no requirement for hormone replacement therapy. There's no requirement. You can't base any decisions on someone's sexual orientation. So there are people that are heterosexual and fully intact that are allowed to transfer in just because they self-declare as a woman.
And so there's no assessment, analysis, no evaluative procedures or what have you. They're just then checking a box. We put you on a bus. And if there's beds available, whatever, we send you over into the women's facility. Now, in the women's facility, are these individuals put in a cell with a female?
That's correct. In CCWF, which is the prison where I was housed, these are 8-person cells. So there's four bunk beds, four bunk beds, a toilet, a shower, two sinks, and they're housed together directly, you know, with the rest of the population. There is a kind of, I think, a battery of questions. There's a committee that they have to go before they're granted their request. But there's only been, I believe, 44 denials. And I think there's been 327 requests, which is questionable because there's a total of 1,900 or over 1,900 trans-identified individuals in the California Department of Corrections. And if it was so horrific as the narrative is being pushed for these people, why aren't all of them trying to transfer into the women's prison? Why is it only these 327? And why are 33.8% of them registered sex offenders? Meaning these aren't people who it's their first rodeo for their first rape. They're registered, meaning they've been paroled, come back with another sex offense. So you would think those would be primary people to not allow to transfer, but they're not. They're prioritized.
So, Amy, what you're saying is that a biological male, plumbing still intact, decides that, you know, I feel like a woman today. They do have to go through some screening, and there have been 44 that have been denied. But what you're saying is that the preponderance have been allowed to be transferred over to the women's facility. And in the women's facility, you have a cell of 8, 4 bunk beds, shower, latrine, everything in this cell. So an intact biological male is showering in front of the other 7 females, potentially.
That's correct. That's correct. And these are very tight quarters. You have about 6 square feet to share between you and your bunkmate. There's women who have to, you know, crawl over somebody's head to get onto the top bunk. And a lot of these people are coming in with lower bunk chronos. And the women have no other choice. And you can't say, I don't want to be in this room, or we don't want to deal with this, or we can't handle this. We're all, you know, survivors. You can't say that. Then you will get moved. You as a woman will get relocated.
So what recourse, and also, I mean, share with us, what are some of the issues and complaints that women have, you know, presented to you and to others about what's happening in these facilities, incarceration facilities?
one of the biggest issues is that the female population is comprised of 92% of abuse survivors. These are women who are already traumatized. So having them relive their traumas by forcing them to be housed with people that are guilty of the same things that their abusers were guilty of is not really healthy. Their mental health is quite an issue, and the mental health services are not adequate, because several women have explained to me that they've been shut down during psych appointments or appointments with mental health clinicians, where they're told they're being transphobic, or they've had their sessions ended early because their clinician felt uncomfortable and unsafe with the subject matter that they were discussing. I mean, women are actively being raped. There's 16 pregnant women in the California Institution for Women. There's no way to prove how these pregnancies happened, but I believe we can figure that out on our own. There's also the prioritization of the housing. You can't get a bed move as a woman. You can't just ask staff for a bed move. Even myself personally, I was getting beat in a room for several months. My bunkie was a person serving a life sentence who told me, if you hit me back and I get an embolism, you're going to be here for the rest of your life. And I believed this person, so I would never hit back. And I just dealt with this for months and months and asked staff in other housing units if they would move me in. And I was shut down constantly until somebody who'd been there for a really long time and had a good relationship with her housing staff was able to vouch for me. And then I got the bed move after I was harassed and subjected to, you know, some really embarrassing situations. Then I was finally moved. But these individuals can get a move at any given time, multiple times, to any yard, any room. As a matter of fact, they can even request to be single cell status, so they can have everyone else moved out of a room because they want to be housed alone.
And you're talking about these individuals that identify as a woman.
Right.
So they have more rights than the women in the women's prison facility.
Absolutely. And that is the exact words that several women have said, the exact same thing. They have rights that these women have never dreamed of.
So they're a special protected class, even in prison.
Yes.
So, and you just brought up the word that, you know, the detractors that will watch this interview are saying that Amy's just another one of these, you know, transphobes, you know, this phobe, that phobe. But what you're talking about is serious concerns about women who are trying to serve their time because of, you know, whatever crime they committed, and they're trying to do better for their life. And here we are exposing them to, as you just talked about, maybe some of the very abuses that they had to endure, which got them off into the wrong path in life, and they're trying to get away from that. How does the California state legislature, when you bring this issue up, what's their response? How do they justify what they just did?
They're all shocked. They've all said they were very surprised. They had no idea. The Women's Caucus was up there a few months ago, and they heard nothing about this. All they knew about was the staff sexual misconduct. But from what I understand, they were instructed not to speak about this issue because they were only focusing on staff sexual assault during that meeting. Mm-hmm. And there is a big crisis with the staff sexual assault. There's an officer who was arrested for, I believe, 96 counts of rape and sodomy against at least 22 women over the course of 8 or 9 years.
Male officer.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh.
And
okay.
So these women are being attacked from every angle. The people that you are there to protect you are doing the same thing as the people who are coming in intentionally with predatory motives. They really have nowhere to go, but they do have, you know, a lot more support for the staff sexual misconduct issues. And I'm guessing because there are settlements that will come from that. So there is the incentive of that for other organizations. And this issue with the trans-identified sexual predators is not going to be, it doesn't make you popular. Yeah. And it definitely doesn't make funding any easier than it was before. It's definitely put me in a different category as well as my two partners. But we didn't prioritize money with this. There were women that needed help and were in crisis, and that was all that mattered. It's still our number one priority.
Have you gotten the opportunity to testify before the California legislature, being their house or assembly, and also their state senate?
No, I haven't. I did make a trip to the Capitol 2 weeks ago with the Freedom Angels and my partner in Fresno, and we just went door to door to legislators' offices and gave them a stack of messages from women dating from January of 2021 until the day before I got there, asking for help. So they can't say that they don't know, and they can't unread what they've read. So they know that this is a problem now. And I'm not in the business of creating new California legislation. I've seen how many bills go up annually and how much ridiculous waste of time and money legislation gets pumped. I just want to see this get amended and fixed in a way that everyone is given equal protection of the law, and women are included in the protections offered in this. I think that's the most reasonable thing. I don't want to take people's rights away. I would just like to see women thought about and not an afterthought ever again. They weren't asked. They were not. They weren't given questionnaires. They weren't included in the frameworking of this. You know, it's said that everyone this was going to impact was included in the process of creating this bill, but that didn't include women. And this has impacted every second of their lives and every, you know, cell of their being. It's ridiculous that they were left out of this.
Do you see this issue in other states than California, or do you see it in the federal penal system as well?
Unfortunately, yes. Some of the most heinous crimes against women have occurred in federal prisons. This is also federal law, that these individuals are prioritized, that they're allowed to transfer into women's facilities with long histories of ongoing sexual abuse. There's one situation out of Texas, as a matter of fact, that is bone chilling. It's absolutely insane how much abuse these women have been subjected to. And the perps have been released, as a matter of fact, without consequence. So mentally, I don't know the kind of permanent damage that this is going to do, but it is going to do permanent damage. I don't know how women can recover from the level of abandonment and deliberate indifference by the people who are supposed to be protecting them.
When you talk about release, or you know, here the case that you're mentioning in Texas, released back out into the prison population or released from prison, period?
Released from prison with no charges filed.
So an individual that's been incarcerated has declared that they are a woman. They are shifted over into the women's facility. They commit crimes against women in a women's facility, and no charges are brought up against them, and they're released back into society?
Correct.
I mean, which case? Tell the audience, because I live in Texas. I mean, which case is this? Where did this happen?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say it yet. It's around Fort Worth.
I'm not too far from Fort Worth, where I'm sitting right now, so that's quite disconcerting.
I've been in touch with some of your state legislators that have been very supportive about what's going on. We just had made contact with a law firm that's going to be helping out with this situation, and it was miraculous. I mean, there's no way that it could have been anything but the Lord orchestrating this. So it is pretty sensitive. It's new in the development, but this place is well known for very nefarious situations. A lot of the women's federal prisons are. I mean, Edna Mahan in New Jersey, this location. And I had no idea. I'm a ex-state prisoner. So I didn't know how much different the federal prisons are. I mean, when you need help in the feds, who do you ask for help? The feds, they're not going to protect you against themselves. I don't know what agency you could go to that could oversee them. And the communication is much more limited than it is with state prisoners as well. They are very controlling. They will intentionally limit your ability to communicate. It's pretty scary.
So if you were queen for the day, what would you do to rectify the situation? What are the solutions?
There need to be definitions that are defined as far as what they would consider a transgender or trans woman. It can't be this nuanced gray area type of explanation where it's just a personal experience. And we can't have legislation that's based on feelings. It has to be based on biological facts. There have to be requirements. Automatically, I would say that not having a penis would be the number one requirement to transfer into a woman's prison.
Yeah, I think that's pretty reasonable.
I think that is fair. And I would like to say non-binary status, identifying as neither male nor female, should definitely not give you the ability to go to a woman's prison, because if you don't even think you're a woman, then why would you then go over there? And would even the playing field by saying everyone should be treated with respect, agency, and dignity. Those can't be rights that are just provided to a small group. That turns into a privilege group, that turns into a power imbalance. I would definitely require equal protection for everyone. Everybody's got to be considered then. If you're going to consider the personal feelings of well-being of these people, then you have to do that for everybody.
You know, Amy, and I'll make this the last question before I get your closing statement. To me, it seems as if there really is a war against women. And women are being sacrificed at this false ideological agenda, you know, that's been made up called transgenderism. And if you speak out, gender dysphoria, it's a mental condition. And if you speak out against, you know, then all of a sudden you're demonized, denigrated, what have you. But this is about biology. This is about fact. This is about what we know to be truth, you know, two genders. And you cannot all of a sudden tell young girls in athletics or young women, even if they're incarcerated, that your rights don't matter, that we're going to make this special protective class. You're a member of the Independent Women's Forum. Do you see this as one of the preeminent issues in our country right now?
Absolutely. This is, you know, this is my hill, and I'll die on it if I have to, because this is part of such a much bigger plan. You know, prison is ground zero for socioeconomic testing and science projects. And what's happening inside the women's prisons right now is just a test run for what is going to be fully unleashed on us in the free world if we don't take care of this problem now. They're counting the days. How long is it going to take for this to not be important before we can unleash this on society? And it's already happening out here. We see it in sports. We see it in other areas where women's spaces have been completely eliminated or invaded. But the level of absolute misogynistic erasure that's happening in the prison is not something that people out here are ready for. This is what I see. When I hear these stories from women, I just imagine them looking at their hands and just slowly disappearing one piece at a time, because it doesn't matter how loud they scream or how many people they ask for help, they're just ignored. It's a supremacy issue. This agenda isn't asking for equality. They're not asking just for visibility. They're demanding supremacy. And this looks very similar to other instances of supremacy in world history. No matter who has it on or what color lipstick you wear with the outfit, supremacy is supremacy. And it's unacceptable.
That's a great point. I'm going to give you the last minute and a half, 2 minutes to talk from your heart to the audience about this issue and why you think it has to be rectified and solved. So, Amy, you've got the closing statement.
Thank you. If I could just encourage every American to have the uncomfortable conversation of this topic. It's not something that anybody really wants to talk about or acknowledge because it's very ugly and it's happening to people that the public generally doesn't care about. But if you look at the bigger picture, everybody's always one mistake away from ending up in prison. These women were not sentenced to this additional cruel and unusual punishment. This is happening in the United States of America, and these stories sound like they're coming out of some kind of third world country. This is not something that anybody signed up for. These women are not asking for anything special, just equal protection of the law. If you could talk to your state legislature, if you could understand this is happening nationwide, there's not a state that's immune to any of this. I mean, if it's happening in Texas, it's happening everywhere. And keep in mind, you know, this isn't, I'm not an anti-trans person. What this is it's hurting all of them. No one's benefiting from this. Everyone is in danger. And this is what it's going to look like out here if we don't remedy this. These women are voiceless. They have been completely abandoned and forgotten. And you can tell a whole lot about a nation according to how they treat their prisoners. And right now, it just looks like America completely hates women. So my encouragement would be to spread this. Let people know. Help raise awareness. If you have one uncomfortable conversation a day, that's restoring the voice of one broken woman who is completely abandoned and uncared for. I know it's not something that people generally think about, but we have to take care of the least of us. And this is definitely the least of us. And we're supposed to remember the prisoners. So if people could do that, just to remember them daily, it would be a big deal. It would be helpful. And it would increase awareness on a huge level. And that's what we need. People can't care about what they don't know about. So conversations are, I think, vital in this situation.
Well, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing. How can people follow you, follow your organization, Woman to Woman, and support you, Amy?
Well, there's a really, amazing docuseries that the Independent Women's Forum is working on and has already released two sections of. It's called Cruel and Unusual Punishment, the Male Takeover of Women's Prisons. And you can see the first two installments on their YouTube channel. That's myself. And there's another woman who did 16 years inside. And it just gives a really accurate depiction of what's going on inside. And we're expecting to release another one, I want to say this week. But it's a really special project. It's amazing. If you could check that out, like and subscribe at the Independent Women's Forum YouTube, it would be greatly appreciated. And, people can follow up and see where we're at with things and keep track of what's happening on my website, which is www.womaniiwoman.org. And you can see different ways you can help us and just stay informed.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to be with us. And ladies and gentlemen, this is a very serious issue because everyone deserves respect and dignity, and we should not sacrifice the rights, the freedoms, and liberties of others to elevate a certain particular protected class because of an ideological agenda. So if you have enjoyed this interview, please support Amy Ichikawa, Women to Women, her faith-based nonprofit, her organization. But also take this interview and share it with others and click the like button. And until next time, remember those women that are in the prison that they want to try to maybe correct their lives and have a better life. But we cannot continue to expose them to, as Amy said, cruel and unusual punishment. Thank you very much. Steadfast and loyal.
Before they burn it down.